Welcome to Inside Seaweed, the podcast looking deep into the seaweed industry through the stories of pioneers, entrepreneurs, and innovators. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Fed the Gobby, and my guest today is a chef of international experience and an innovator, Andrew Wilkinson from North Coast Seafoods. Trained at the Culinary Institute of America, Andrew worked as a chef in Boston and New York City. He was part of the U.S. Culinary Olympic team twice, opened a restaurant in Fukuoka, Japan, and had prior experience in Germany. His newest mission is real food for healthier kids, and that's what brought him to experiment with seaweed, as you'll hear in a moment. This episode is also available on video, so if you prefer that format, you now have the option to head over to YouTube and watch the whole episode there. Either way, this is going to be fun. I had a great time. Andrew, you'll see, is an amazing human being. He's going to deliver fascinating insights from his amazing experience, and he's going to make you laugh at the same time. So please enjoy. Andrew, welcome to Inside Seaweed.
Fed, it's a pleasure. Honestly, a pleasure to be here.
It's really great to see you again. And I'm really glad we managed to organize this conversation. So to set the scene, I think it would be nice if you could tell the audience how we met. That's probably the best place to start. What do you think?
Absolutely. So meeting you at a kelp conference, you never know who you're going to meet there. And I was obviously the only chef there. So wearing whites at a kelp farmer conference already raised a bunch of red flags with people at the conference. But what happens is all of a sudden, because in general, people trust chefs and people love food. So there's sort of this gravity, I think, of people saying, what the heck is a chef doing here at a kelp farmer conference? And as you walked by, and you were inquisitive, of course, and that's how the whole conversation started. And that's how most of these conversations start with me these days, because I love wearing a chef coat. I'm not a farmer, but I think we have a critical role to play in the future of kelp.
Absolutely. And, you know, starting a conversation with food is always the best as far as I'm concerned.
It's easy, right?
Yeah. 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 And well, I mean, we'll get back to what happened there and what I happened to have an opportunity to taste. But let's hit pause on that for a second and go back in time a bit. When did you first become aware of seaweed and what caught your attention and why?
I want to say it was probably about 7 or 8 years ago when I found out that there was this new aquaculture project happening in Maine. So I am from Maine originally. I don't live in Maine now. And when I learned about it, I've been a chef for 40 plus years. So I'm always looking for the next interesting food ingredient project. What's happening out there. So I sent out and got to know what was going on in Maine, and I got some kelp, and I tell you the truth, I didn't like it at all. They were making some sort of a noodle or linguine or something out of it, and it had zero flavor to me. So it stopped. And then basically what happened to me was my job here at North Coast Seafoods has a lot to do with training of chefs around the country and how to be profitable in seafood and how to be more knowledgeable in seafood. So when COVID hit, basically everything stopped, as we all know. And as it stopped, I'm very blessed and lucky to work for a company that sort of trusts my intuition when it comes to chefs. So I asked them, I said, I want to follow up on this project while our lives have sort of been put on hold right now. And I want to sort of dive into the world of this main aquaculture of sugar kelp. That's when I closed and locked the door of my test kitchen here and started experimenting with Maine sugar kelp.
That's right. What happened. So it wasn't love at first sight. You had your reservations at first.
Very much so. Very much so.
But then a gut feeling to sort of dig a bit deeper or dive a bit deeper.
The gut feeling was when I actually tasted the raw kelp product out of the ocean, and it immediately hit home and sparked that briny oceanness that I thought that I missed the first time. And once you eat kelp like that, you can't get it. A chef can't get it out of their brain. It's strange enough for a lot of people just to think that we're eating kelp these days. But again, I knew as a chef, not that we have a responsibility, but you could take it that way, almost to be that bridge, that gap between new product and consumer, new ingredient and consumer, an ingredient that not only is nutritious, but does great for the environment and the ocean and the consumer, because life has changed. And I think it's a fantastic message, and it tasted good. So I'm like, I have to prosecute this ingredient. And my company, North Coast Seafoods, allowed me to do that.
Had you ever done anything similar before, as in working with non-mainstream ingredients, or was it a bit of a first?
I do a lot of R&D work, as we say, research and development, which also is innovation. And over the years, since I removed myself from the day-to-day restaurant business, I thought that there was a need for me to be more involved in involving seafood, sustainable seafood, with K-12 schools. So my drive, my mission was to get kids to eat more seafood, underutilized seafood that was coming out of the Gulf of Maine. So ocean perch here is a good example. It's a, you know, we live in a cod haddock world. Everyone wants that beautiful, white, sweet, firm white fish, but it leaves all of these other beautiful fish that aren't as attractive, whether it's like the ocean perch or the Atlantic pollock from the Gulf of Maine. So those were opportunities for me to introduce those to kids. I coated the fillets with a local Cape Cod potato chip and became fish in chips. I took, and as a large seafood company, we have a lot of byproduct, and flounder and sole was one of those. And I created a sole nugget, a buffalo sole nugget, turned them into a little nugget, and they were solos. So it was all of this development for K-12, which I think the company enjoyed being able to bring kids into the fold of our research and development.
Got it. Okay, so 2020, COVID hits, everything stops, and you go into this rabbit hole of seaweed and kelp specifically. What was the plan at that point, if there was a plan at all?
I was already smitten with the ingredient. It had all the benefits that I wanted to work with it. And looking at what was going on out there in the development stage, there were a lot of condiments. Everything was a condiment when it came to kelp. Kelp pesto, kelp kimchi, kelp salad, this and that. You know, you can only go so far with a condiment when it comes to kelp. So having worked with young people in schools and digging that whole part of the industry, I was like, okay, there's only one thing you can do. You have to create kelp, make kelp into what we call the center of the plate. How do you make it the item on the plate? But what I didn't want to do, because what was extremely popular back then and taking the world by storm, was the Impossible Burger and the Beyond Beef and all of those meat analogs. So like I said, I am a chef. I am not a scientist. This jacket ends at my waist. It's not one of those long white coats that scientists wear. I don't know how to cook like that. And when I look at those ingredients on what they were using, and I'm not anti meat analog things, there's a time and place for everything. It just wasn't me. I knew that my advantage was to make a veggie burger, make a veggie item that was a clean label that led with kelp. It had to lead with kelp. And if I did that and learned how to use, add that protein foundation to it, I knew I was going to be successful. So it took me about a solid 3 or 4 months to turn this into a center of the plate. And I wanted to make, again, so I was working with kids. So I decided to make a meatball or a nugget. And it needed to have a certain amount of cleanness to it, a amount of protein that kids could benefit on the lunch cafeteria tray.
Of course, yeah. You said something there. You said you wanted to make it center of plate. Why is that important?
That was going to drive kelp to broader acceptance across the industry. I knew it was going to be difficult selling the kelp anyway, but making it, turning it into a flavor profile that kids will like. And we're talking K through 12, 6-year-old to 18-year-olds.
The ultimate challenge.
Exactly. So if you can get kids to like this, trust me, everyone else will fall into suit. So, and that's what's happening.
It was very much to champion this ingredient into a mainstream
yes.
use. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So what sort of experiment have you conducted to develop this new product, these meatballs?
So the experiment was looking at, again, I talk about kids a lot, and I understand a lot about K-12 dining, is allergens are a big part of our food service these days. So I wanted to eliminate allergens right off of the bat. And then I wanted it to taste veggie-like. I'm going to use the word primavera because that's how I describe the kelp meatballs and kelp burgers that I make, because the second ingredient is fresh green chickpeas. If there are chefs who are listening to this right now, a lot of chefs have never even heard of one fresh green chickpeas. They think that chickpeas come in this dried state, the tan, they make the hummus, they make the salads, fine. But the chickpeas start in a beautiful green pod, similar to an English pea. But what happens after it comes out of the pod and it's blanched, it becomes this unbelievable foundation with structure. So once I mixed the kelp with the green chickpea, and then knowing that schools needed whole grain, I added brown rice, cooked brown rice. And so those three ingredients became the staple, the foundation of my meatball, which had that slight brininess of the kelp, the foundation of the green chickpea, the whole grain of the brown rice. And then all I had to do was add some protein, and I added pea protein. I did not want to add soy, no isolate products, just soy protein powder and texture. And then it was a question of adding great flavor ingredients of extra virgin olive oil, garlic, a floral, basil, herbage in there. So, yeah.
Yeah, sorry about my webcam. I'll try and sort it out on the flight, but if it doesn't happen,
no big deal.
No big deal. So you started with the foundations, and then from the nutritional foundations, and then went on a journey to add the flavor.
Yes. And that took some time. That was definitely because I wear a lot of different hats here, as most people do in their business. I wasn't dedicated to kelp. It was just part of my job during COVID. I still had other things I was doing, but there was a lot of trial and error. So my office is in my test kitchen, and outside of my office, there is a group of accounting offices, business office, and I have some select 2 or 3 people that have very, I'll say pedestrian, not pedestrian in a negative way, but pedestrian palates where almost like kids.
Yeah.
So they have kid palates. So, and a little bit picky. So I would use them to say, okay, 15 minutes, it's time to try something new. And they got their share of kelp for sure. But that's how it happens.
You kind of want to start with somebody that is not used to exotic ingredients and things like that.
Yes.
Because you know, yeah. if you win with the, let's say, the average consumer, yes. then you know you'll get the masses. Got it. Okay.
And I think that's what kelp needed. Kelp, to make it a broader appeal, you don't want to be polarizing in the flavor. To be honest with you, I started out because we have this fun tongue-in-cheek name. We call them Swedish meatballs. So this is a take on a Swedish meatball. So my original flavor profile was to turn this into that that national dish of Sweden with a meat ball with cinnamon and a little nutmeg and allspice. And that was a complete disaster, except the name stuck. And so we have fun calling it a Swedish meatball.
I see now. I see. I was wondering what that meant. I see now. Okay, so at this point, you have a team at North Coast Seafood working on this, or are you working alone on this project?
I was working completely alone with this
Completely
project,
alone,
yes.
Wow.
Yes, because the meatball wasn't the only thing. I was making kelp arancini. I was making kelp jalapeno poppers. I was making kelp potato tots, tater tots with kelp, all in the name of making it center of the plate item for young people. So that's when I went to Atlantic Sea Farms. You probably know Bree Warner, really one of a mentor of mine, unbelievable. What's the word I'm looking for? She's a mentor. She offers a lot of inspiration in kelp. I found her. I am all ears when she's talking, and we love this back and forth with food. So I brought this all to Brie. I'm using all of Atlantic Sea Farm sugar kelp. So we created this wonderful relationship around kelp and food, making it that, again, that center of the plate item. So I went up there and fed their staff all of these innovations that I had. And it turned out to be a fantastic partnership now where we share in this success together.
Nice. So at that point, you had multiple potential products that you were testing,
yes.
Different iterations. What did you learn from this first phase of the development? What were the biggest sort of lessons?
I guess the biggest lesson was don't be shy. I came up with sort of a mantra of anything you do with kale, you can do with kelp.
Interesting. Okay.
As a chef starts to develop their signature dishes or create nuance by using kelp, I was thinking, okay, well, kale has had this renaissance. I mean, and that's sort of where kelp is right now, where kale was back in 1995, where kale was basically being used as a visual garnish in seafood cases and buffet lines, not to be eaten. But now kale is one of the most prolific healthy vegetable, leaf vegetables that you can eat in your diet. And I think that's where we are right now. That's where we are right now with kelp. We're sort of pushing or sharing this narrative on how it's important for not just nutrition, but it's important for especially locally the lobstermen who are taking it on as a diversify their income as the lobsters sort of head north in Canada. So, which is what's happening.
Was there, when you were trying all these different ideas for possible products to make kelp center of the plate, was there ever a moment, there's two things I want to explore, and maybe at that end, we'll see what happens. Was there a moment when you thought, I'm not sure this is going to work? And if not that dramatic, was there any failure, any product that just didn't work?
So I think anytime chefs develop new dishes. There's always a moment of, because you have to come to grips with, you cannot please everyone.
Of course, yeah.
We chefs know this best. You can't please everyone, which is why when we go into a restaurant, there is a menu, a large menu. And some people will be have courage to try something like a kelp product, and some will not. So the failure was trying to turn it into this very savory sort of too thought-provoking of that Swedish meatball thing. It just didn't work with kelp because kelp kept coming back to the brine and the floralness of the flavor profile. So I was like, okay, let's just turn this into, you know, the best veggie burger that you've ever had, or the best veggie nugget, the best veggie bite. So let's do that. Concentrate on that. Make the flavor profile somewhat neutral, except have these good flavors of extra virgin olive oil, good flavors of basil, and the chickpea, like I said, the primavera, the springiness of it. Because what's happening here, which is I'm sure is happening all across the EU, is that plant-based products, they are here to stay.
No, absolutely.
That diet of being a flexitarian is more and more popular every day. And knowing you can't please everyone, for instance, this is the plant-based product now of the Boston Public Schools. So there are 80,000 kids who go to the Boston Public Schools who eat free every single day. If you can hit 10%, 20%, that's a great number of plant-based eating students or giving kelp a try, which is such a win-win.
And on a personal level, I suppose it also speaks of how much of an impact you can have with this product.
Yes, 100%. I mean, and word travels fast in this industry regarding trends, because when they look at the ingredient panel of this particular product, having no allergens in it was very important. Having it be 100% plant-based, no gluten, no soy, that is all of a sudden what's taking it across the country. And I'm very proud of these people who are taking it on as a new innovation that belongs in their schools. Here's another, just such a fantastic thing that's happening in this world right now, is now there's because of the benefits that kelp has for the environment, this is the first time in history that I've been told has ever happened. There's now a collaboration in a lot of elementary schools at fourth, fifth, and sixth grade classroom range, where there's a collaboration between the classroom and the cafeteria now, where we're learning about the benefits of kelp. And then when they go to the lunchroom, they are eating kelp for lunch. So to hammer it home that this is an item, a food of the future, and they get it.
Yeah, that is a great point, and I do want to come back to it later if we have an opportunity, for sure.
Of course.
Let's go back for a second. You at a point where you had approached Atlantic Sea Farms, and you had all these different products. How did you land on the burger? What's the story there?
I think it was love at first bite. When Brie took a bite of the ginger sesame burger, she said, this is where we need to be. So, and like I said, she is a mentor. She is an inspiration. She knew that kelp needed to be in the center of the plate because they were very good at making their kimchi, great signature product. But as we say, that was not going to feed the Admiral's cat, as it were. We needed to make this bigger. And the burger and the meatball nugget was a way to do that.
Okay. Is the formula for the kelp meatball, is it the same as the burger, or is it two different things?
So for North Coast Seafoods, our meatball and the burger are exactly the same formula. So, and here's what happened was, because as I was part of the innovation for Atlantic Sea Farms Sea Veggie Burger, because of my work that I've done in institutional cooking, I knew it needed to be a par-cooked product that went into institutional food, meaning I had to take the burger and the meatball and par-cook it and then freeze it so it would be able to cook from frozen in a very short period of time in a convection oven. So because schools don't have the time to crisp it up on a griddle or in a pan, they don't have the time for that. You know, at Boston College, if they need to produce 600 portions of kelp burgers or kelp meatballs in a matter of an hour, they need to go into a combi oven or a convection oven, and they come out in 10 minutes and they're crisp and they're able to hold for a period of time. So there was a lot of innovation and formula changing to add water, add more oil to make it more supple in your mouth, have a good toothsome feel to it. So
I see. So you worked with Atlantic Sea Farms on the burger, but the formula for that you developed for schools is different, and it sounds like it started with schools in mind from the get-go. It was specifically designed for that.
Yes. Schools in mind was absolutely mission number one, and it has to work. If it doesn't work in a volume cooking situation, then you it's nothing. So it needed to be formulated and changed and worked on to make sure that it works. It doesn't fall apart. It's able to hold. It's just a term that we use in food service that, you know, if you have hundreds of students walking through a cafeteria, well, you can't cook it to order. We call it batch cooking, where it will be cooked every 20 minutes and it will take 10 minutes in the oven. It goes into a warming station, and it has to be able to hold in that situation and not fall apart while still keep its moisture and its taste level.
Is there any other difference between your, I suppose, usual work or as a chef and versus dealing with schools? Is there different values, different challenges? Some already mentioned. Is there anything else that makes dealing with schools particularly, you know, different or challenging?
It's always challenging because you're dealing with a very difficult palate of kids who would probably rather eat pizza every single day, but the food service directors can't do that. So the challenge is to, how do we introduce a more healthy product that's going to be good for them and be able to bring that information home to their parents to say, okay, this is great. Kids are eating something different. Because in many cases, especially in urban settings, the school lunch meal is the best meal of the day, their most nutritious meal of the day. Sometimes their only meal of the day.
It's a big responsibility.
It is. And I've been a chef around the world. I have, as I like to say, I've been there, done that. I've had the opportunity to be the executive chef of the Rainbow Room on top of Rockefeller Center in New York City. And now I go do demonstrations for second and third graders, which I will tell you is a fantastic experience in the sort of the twilight of my chef career, to be ending on this note of spreading this, the gospel of kelp. I love it.
You think it's your toughest audience yet?
Maybe. Yes, because there are still those times. I'm going to go back. You can't please everyone. And when kid says, no way am I trying that. No way. And they just walk away. I'm like, oh, you kill me, dude. But it happens. It happens.
Yeah, there's some radical honesty there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And it sometimes then I'm like, I'm not even going to tell them that there's seaweed in this nugget. Just don't even tell them. It's a veggie nugget. So, But on that point, plant-based is growing so much in the United States with just different people, just the Asian ways or Indian halal ways of eating. And it's never been a big part of this culture. And now it's growing, and it's important that we offer good choices for these students to be able to have. So,
on that, you're obviously collaborating with the American elementary schools and secondary education. Is their food offering in need of innovation? And if so, why? What's wrong with that, with their offering?
Well, when we talk about school food service, because there's not a lot of money involved, there's not a lot of profit, and there's not a lot of, you know, they work, the food service people work in a system, I hate to say, but it's a race to the bottom line. How cheap can we make something for these students? Again, I'm very lucky to work for North Coast Seafoods, because North Coast Seafoods is not in this to be a big profit maker. This is doing the right thing with a new product. So the challenge is to make it accessible across the board. I mean, kelp farming is still a finite number right now. You know, Atlantic Sea Farms might have 1 million+ pounds coming out of the water. So right now we're still in a finite state.
Okay, let's take a complete sort of left turn into... I just want to take us on a bit of a sidebar, if it can be relevant. What are the rules and regulations around using kelp in food? I don't know much about this, but I would imagine, being new, there may be some gaps or some specific regulations. Have you encountered any obstacles in, and if so, you're shaking your head. So
zero
yeah, obstacles.
Zero. We usually get the one question that will come up, or it could be heavy metal content. But this is not something that the kids will be eating, you know, mega amounts of every day. It's not offered every single day at school. So that really doesn't come into play. And also, when you're dealing with Atlantic Sea Farms kelp in Maine, it's a top of the water plant. It's a being aquaculture. It's not a bottom dredged item where a lot of those silty minerals might be. And it's being grown in the winter when really there's nothing going on, no boating and no recreational happening in the water. So it's that winter crop. Really, once we go down, it's win-win across the board. So I've had no negative and
no negative, no obstacles.
No, not at all.
Not at all. I know, for example, in terms of, I hope I'm pronouncing this right, iodine. There is, it's something that we need in terms of nutrition, but as I understand it, too much can be too much. Is that regulated at all? Does it sort of influence the amount of kelp that you can include in per serving, or not really?
So it doesn't yet. I mean, again, too much of anything is not a good thing. So we do need that iodine in our diets. Too much is not good. So if a student is having a 3-ounce burger or 4 ounces of meatballs, it's doing only positive things for their health. There's the higher education part of this as well. I always talk about the K-12, but now the young adults they're on board, because once they heard about this, this is a freight train that's hitting the food industry in America pretty fast. As you say, as I say, you can't swing a dead cat by the tail without hitting an article on the kelp as a new ingredient in the industry out there. It's a mic drop moment. You'd be amazed, even Harvard students, Yale students, Boston College, we're in UMass. We do demonstrations, Notre Dame. I mean, some of the smartest young people, And I say, okay, well, what is this? It's a kelp meatball. Kelp. Why are you using kelp? And when you say, well, it's the only plant in the world that needs no land, it needs no fresh water, you don't feed it, there's never a pesticide or herbicide used in it, and it makes the ocean a cleaner place. I'm having those cross-eyed looks of students saying, wow, I never thought of that.
How did I not know about it? Yeah.
How did I not know about that? Exactly.
Yeah.
And you made it taste good. And so it becomes the win-win. Yeah.
Yeah, my next question is probably a good segue on this. In your experience so far with developing seaweed-based or, you know, kelp-based specifically products, tell me about the different elements that contributed to the success and adoption of these products. Specifically, you know, the role of taste, the health benefits, and the environmental benefits.
There needed to be a commitment to going into the field, first finding out these progressive thinking people, these progressive thinking food directors who say, I love this idea. Will you come out and do a tasting for our students? So, like, everyone knows what cod tastes like. They don't really need to taste it. Everyone knows what a piece of fish and chips or breaded fish tastes like. I don't have to go out and do a tasting. When I say I have a kelp nugget or a kelp meatball,
you get some
red
looks.
Flag goes up. Yeah. So are you willing to come to the school and do a tasting? And you have to be willing to go and meet them where they're at. Show them what's happening here. So
education, getting people on board.
Yeah. And educating the right people too, not just the food service director, but the administration of the school, the science teachers, the environmental science teachers of the school. These are the people who will make this product successful.
Yeah. So
press.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So just getting the word out, bit by bit, sort of influencing public perception on this new ingredient.
The other way we do it was how the first pilot program, before the product was even done, we started a pilot program in Cambridge Public Schools, right across the river from Boston. And Cambridge is always known as being sort of this very healthful suburb of downtown Boston. So their food service director there, Melissa Honeywood, said, I love this product so much, I'm going to step away from it. I am going to give you to the students. Her idea, which was genius, because there's always that vocal minority of student out there who is very aware and conscious about what they're eating, and they want to eat better, and they're concerned about the environment. And that vocal minority in Cambridge Public Schools was a club called the Green Plate Club. So Melissa, the director, gave me them. I became the mentor for them to show them the benefits of the kelp. We did the tastings. And then all of a sudden, it was not up to the decision makers of the school. The students were the ones who adopted this whole program. And through social media, they were the ones who adopted It's Kelp Day, or they had a count. It was a countdown to Kelp Day. So within the school program, the students themselves who have the Instagram and Facebook sites, it was a countdown to Kelp Day. And they were the ones, they were the driver to get kelp on the menu as a regular item in the Cambridge Public Schools. So a very proud moment where it wasn't about me. It wasn't about the product. It was about the students' acceptance and belief in the product that was the driver. And from there, we talk about press. The Boston Globe, a major publication, obviously, in the United States, picked up that whole story and wrote a fantastic half-page article in the food section about this Green Plate Club in the Cambridge Public Schools. And they still operate today. Yeah.
Congrats on that. And yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. It's awesome.
it's a big achievement. And, you know, it must be really nice that the students took ownership of it.
Yes.
As opposed to, you know, I see that a lot in general, you know, with seaweed products. There's a push and a pull. And it sounds like you had the pull from the students and that, you know, supercharged the whole effort.
Yes.
What do you think won them over? Do you think was just pure taste or just the story around the environmental side of things?
The environmental side of things was really, I think, the first hook that brought them in. It was that mic drop moment of an ingredient that you are going to consume that can actually help the environment and help the economic development of local fishermen. That was the initial thing, because they learned about that before they even put it into their mouth. Yeah, any item that chefs make, very rare are you just eating a normal thing. So you have to, as we say, chef it up a little bit. You have to create a dipping sauce. You have to create a dish that goes along with it and promote the whole dish. And, you know, nobody's eating just meatballs on their own. I'm sure there are some who do, but most people are eating it with a sauce, with a condiment, with a type of pasta. So I have to these days create those dishes to help chefs and food service directors make this succeed in their operation. I spent 3 days at Notre Dame, University of Notre Dame in South Bend, Indiana. I mean, one of the best universities in the country by far, and working with them to look at their food service operation and how do we make kelp succeed in your operation. If you're familiar with the Sweet Greens type of restaurant, which is a salad-based phenomenon, you walk down sort of the Chipotle style of eating where, oh, give me the quinoa greens, give me arugula, I'd like roasted peppers, corn, and then for my protein, oh, put on the kelp meatballs on top of that. So that's what's happening in schools these days. It's sort of this custom but personalized way of eating that's very popular in schools these days. So how do we make that succeed in these university programs and tell the story of kelp at the same time? So that's that's where a lot of social media comes into it.
Yeah. Zooming out a bit, because we talked a lot about schools and that sort of food system. Perhaps more in general, what do you think is the role of chefs in championing seaweed as a new ingredient, as an innovation? Is there a role for chefs and what is
that? Of course. I mean, again, chefs are the gap. They bridge that gap in between the farmer and the consumer. Chefs are the trusted ones that are going to do that. Chefs, of course, are the main influencers of all food trends that are out there. So kelp is a major new food trend. It needs to come from the chefs. They need to see it in restaurants. Chefs, of course, are innovators by nature with the recipes, and they can create broad appeal. You know, you don't want your kelp to taste like low tide, you know.
Yeah.
You want your kelp to taste vibrant, that brininess of the ocean. You want that flavor to come through. Chefs know how to create that nuance of kelp in those details when they create a recipe. Chefs are natural educators and mentors to food. Chefs are more believable than big corporations. I trust chefs over somebody in a suit and tie telling me I should eat something. Plus, chefs have a stake. They have, you know, they are have a personal stake in sustainable practices, so we continue moving on in a positive way with what's going on in the chef world, in the culinary world. And chefs are experts. Chefs are the experts at creating flavors and textures. Notice, you know, and I'm not knocking the meat analog programs, but you don't see any chefs behind those products. You see scientists behind those products. Chefs create clean label food. And what happens when they put it onto their restaurant menus, We talk about this often in the restaurants. It creates table side talking points. I love that term, and I spend a lot of time in restaurants working with servers and the front of the house people, because they are the voice to the customer. They are the ones that say, you have to try Chef Andrew's Swedish meatballs. He turns it into a resolution salad. What's a resolution salad? Oh, a resolution salad is what he created for his resolution for 2024. It's a smear of hummus with a pickled quinoa and cucumber and red onion pickle salad with radishes and arugula with warm kelp meatballs and a spritz of garlic, extra virgin olive oil. It's like, forget about it. Give me that. Okay, that's what I'm going to have, you know?
Yeah. You definitely convinced me. That's for sure.
So chefs are integral to the success of this. And of course, marketing people. I mean, look, how did kale become to where kale is now? Kelp is on that trajectory. And I believe it's going to happen a lot faster because of chefs.
You mentioned marketers. I suppose chefs, of course, has a role, as you just articulated, but you also hinted at how important it is to tell the story about the ingredients.
Because the story involves the environment and using ingredients that we want to make a good culinary experience that enhances our sustainability practices. They have to go hand in hand. We need to have that good conscience, environmental, social conscience, that we're doing the right thing. I come from Boston here. There's this, what we call Cape Cod. Everyone knows it. It's not that far. It's 40 miles down the road from where I'm sitting right now. And one of the saddest statements that I get when I train chefs is that there are no more cod on Cape Cod. And that is a really sad, it's a sad state of our environment and what we've done. We thought cod would never go away, but it did. And it moved to places, and we weren't good stewards with our unbelievable natural resources that we had here. We never thought cod would go away. Well, cod is gone. It's gone north, and it's gone to places or stayed in places that have managed the resource well. You know, similar to here in the States, in Virginia, the coal industry, you know, the Virginia coal miners never thought that coal would go away. It's here to stay. Well, now they're trying to get them to make solar panels, you know, because they did not pivot. I love that Bree Warner at Atlantic Sea Farms is allowing the local seafood industry to pivot, because as the Gulf of Maine warms, lobsters head north, and the lobstermen in Maine need to diversify their income, and they are giving the opportunity now to pivot before the worst happens. So there's a great, great story to tell here. And the smarter we get after losing our cod industry, the smarter we get to save these sustainable practices. Kelp is here to stay. And it's the most exciting ingredient I've ever worked with as a chef of 40 plus years.
That says something, doesn't it?
Yeah, I've worked through Europe, I've worked in Asia, and I've worked all across the United States as a chef. And I've had a fantastic chef career. And I have not had this level of excitement ever that I'm having now.
That's fantastic. So nice to hear. Look, I think you nicely went back to the educational piece, which I wanted to go back to. Of course, all the reasons that you just highlighted explain and support why it's so important to have that educational piece in schools as well, get the students on board and make them understand why they're doing this and how it's part of a much bigger picture. You talked about your career. If you're happy to stay another 5 minutes or so, I just want to close with, I just want to go into what would be your plan for the future. You know, what else are you working on?
Plan for the future is sometimes I'm more ambassador than chef these days. I feel like I have a very good formula that is built for growth in our kelp meatball and kelp burger and our partnership with Atlantic Sea Farms to take this to that next level and next level and next level. I'm more than satisfied right now to keep it on this. Everyone asks me all the time, where can I buy these? Where can I buy these? I proudly say, you can go back to school if you want. You're never too old to go back to school, because most people probably listening to this understand that once you go into a retail environment, it changes everything. It's sad, but it's true. There's a dumbing down. You've got to make this cheaper. You've got to make this more affordable. But right now, I am affordable. We make this affordable for K-12 schools and higher education. So that's where the future is to make this grow. I can't tell you the excitement I get when I get a phone call from Austin, Texas Public Schools, Minneapolis Public Schools, Boulder, Colorado, Stanford University, Anchorage, Alaska, who are hearing about this. So there's the future for me is to bring this, keep this into that educational, that K-12 classroom, and have the college students, university students who will really push this as a trend into the next level. And then again, I'm a bit in my twilight a little bit, but look where this is going to be in 10, 20 years. It's amazing. There will be new adopters coming on all the time, all the time.
So on that then, if not sort of expanding outside of the education system, what other underutilized seaweed species do you think may deserve a spotlight? Because obviously you focused a lot on kelp. Have you identified anything else?
No, I haven't, to be honest with you, because I can get your bandwidth just gets so full with people pulling at you to come here, go there. I think what I'm seeing happening as you go to these conferences, and specifically in the Portland conference, there were people from all over the globe, from Australia, New Zealand, India. I had this unbelievable conversation with an ex-chef from India who's looking to start growing kelp all over the world. So I think as we become better stewards of our oceans and learn to grow this particular product in our oceans around the world. But again, what I'm hearing from farmers around the world is, okay, I'm growing it. I don't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
So this is where the chef comes in, and we have to make it more mainstream. So I'm all up for challenging chefs across the world to do innovation, just like I did during COVID, and bring it to, listen, I already gave you the answers to the test. Think it's kale. Anything you do with kale, you can do with kelp. So,
and I suppose, you know, from a chef's perspective, it must be quite exciting to think that you have this new world, you know, for you, this new world of vegetables that is essentially untapped, or if not untapped, underutilized. And who knows what you could do with that? You know, I hear dolls can be really good for, you know, in terms of the taste profile. I don't know if you have had any exposure to that, but it's almost like you have a whole new menu of species of vegetables that
it's like a treasure chest. Like a treasure chest, you know. Dulse, I'll be honest with you. So growing up in Maine, my dad used to chew dulse like a lot of older cats used to do. And as a not child, it didn't go over that well.
yeah, I can see that.
I love sugar kelp.
Yeah. Okay, Andrew, I'm getting hungry here. Normally, don't mind doing interviews remotely. But in this case, I think I missed a trick. It could have been good to do this in person. And at this point, it would be when we would start frying some meatballs on the side.
Yes, you did. You did not plan this correctly.
No. I completely failed in that front. Is there anything you would like to talk about that we may have missed? Anything that you'd like to point people to?
I think we really covered a lot of it. I think the chef, you know, I'm a big Simon Sinek fan of trying to develop my why. You know, it was always, as a chef, you're always, you know, create great tasting food. And now it's, I think you're really, the why becomes, it changes. Of course, everyone's why evolves constantly, but it's evolving now to create these culinary experiences, really great culinary experiences, while embracing sustainability for the environment. It's such a big part of where I'm at right now, because when I go to these schools, I see it in young people. So they're motivating my customer base of children, motivate me now to keep doing this. And when the art, the culinary arts meets the consciousness of our planet, you know you're in a good place at that point. So
absolutely. Where can people find you online?
A lot of my stuff is right on northcoastseafoods.com. We're a Boston-based company. There's a lot of videos. There's a lot of kelp information. A lot of the kelp dishes that I work with, ideation for schools, higher ed, or at home. We do sell our seaweedish meatballs, the kelp meatballs, direct to customers online. Again, we don't expect right away. There's no immediate plans to go retail on it. I'm sure they will be retail someday, but all that information and labels and everything you need is at North Coast Seafoods with an S on the end .com.
Brilliant. We'll put all of that in the show notes. So if people want to get in touch, you know, that'd be fantastic.
And I love speaking to like-minded people. I love interacting with people about this particular project, because I'm not the only person. I'm not looking to rule the world in kelp. I'm looking to share the spotlight across the board with chefs around the globe.
Absolutely. And I'm sure you'll find a lot of like-minded people in this audience. So, yeah.
Excellent. Excellent.
You're fantastic. Among, yeah. Andrew, it was really great to catch up. It was fun.
Fed, thank you so much.
So interesting. Thank you so much for taking the time.
My pleasure. Fed, you take care.